Oh, oh, prefer.
Stuart.
We're not ready.
A jawbreaker.
I call the House Committee on Health Care to order. We've got a lot of work to do today. I'd like to get through it as fast as we can. I have five bills I know I want to move to revenue, I mean to rules. So if it would be handy for everybody, I'm losing committee members.
Have we received the letters back from the speaker?
I don't know.
I
know I have the permission to do it. Do you have the letters?
No. Yesterday, last meeting, Mar brought them in. We can call Mar. Which one's got?
Okay.
So he's not being helpful anymore.
Failing that.
Which one's going to kill?
I'm not sure yet. But there are a couple that I want to actually work. So okay. I suppose if all else fails, let's start with the ones we want to do something about. Yep.
On 27/28, people here from the invited to come.
I know, but I have a senator and a representative who want to join them. So I think I'm in courtesy going to wait for the senator and the representative. I will say that. For the folks visiting from Klask and I who want to talk about House Bill 2787, Representative Witt and Senator Johnson. Turns out Senator Johnson's in a meeting that I deserted, and I expect she'll be there for a bit, but it's pretty important. As soon as she gets out of that meeting, Representative Witt and Senator Johnson will come down and join you for a hearing on that bill. And so watch them coming in the door when they do. I would like to open up a... It seems like we're disorganized. It's because I'm disorganized. Let's open up a work session on 3418. Would you help us think about 3418, please?
If I can. This is the bill that sought to reverse how medical payments are ascertained by encouraging primary care physicians and home care and home hospital home health homes to get reimbursed for keeping people well, as opposed to getting reimbursed for seeing people because they're sick. There is a dash. Two amendment on this, and we have the fiscal on it. There is a no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on this bill. And I presume there are people here who can speak on the effect of the amendment.
Will somebody come and talk to us on this one? All right, who else?
Chair Green Lake, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm here representing Care Oregon. We did have an opportunity to brief you on these same amendments last Wednesday. What we didn't have at the time was a fiscal, and we had recently gotten the amendments, and we hadn't had a chance to check with everyone to make sure the amendments did what they had need for them to do. We've since had a check-in with all of the folks who were part of the process of coming up with this language, and all are satisfied that this bill is going to meet their needs. We've had a check-in with the folks from Hooper who had related that there was some question about how this would interact with Senate Bill 456, which is now part of 2009. Reluctant to speak on their behalf, but I think we're satisfied that there's a way for these bills to complement each other. And there's no fiscal impact. So I would be happy to answer any questions, but I don't want to repeat what we did last Wednesday.
Good. And the dash twos we have in front of us is a gut and stuff.
That's correct.
Sir, do you want to introduce yourself and chime in?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Doug Riggs, Oregon Primary Care Association, ditto.
Ditto. Is there a fiscal with the ditto?
Double.
Not that I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'll take a motion to adopt 3418 and move to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We need to adopt dash 2 amendments.
Ah, good idea.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3418 dated April 22nd, 2009.
Is there any discussion on the dash 2 amendments? Is there any objection to the dash 2 amendments? Dash 2 are a part of House Bill 3418.
We have a fiscal?
We have a fiscal. It's a
no fiscal.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3418 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion on House Bill 3418? Do you call the roll, please?
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dembrough?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Representative Penimer?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 3418 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Somebody like to carry that?
Mr. Chair, I'll carry it.
Got it. Representative Maurer will carry it. I'm trying to find. I'd like to open a close the work session on House Bill. What did we just do?
3418.
And open a work session on House Bill 2604. And Administrator, where are we? 2604.
What this measure does, we haven't had it before us for a while. It requires state health plans, health insurers, health care providers to transmit any health information in electronic form in connection with certain ORIS statutes, and health care clearinghouses to include in annual reports descriptions of procedures by management to safeguard individually identifiable health information held in electronic and hard copy forms. They must also identify any deficiencies in the procedures as well as any known breaches of the security and all steps being taken to address deficiency in safeguard procedures.
Do you have a fiscal on it?
There is a minimal fiscal, minimal expenditure impact.
Okay.
And no revenue impact.
Okay. Is there any discussion on House Bill 2604?
There is a dash one amendment.
Ah, okay. And that's what the fiscal's on?
Yes. And I have some information. I have some information about the effect of the dash one amendment. It was drafted to correct a technical issue with the original bill. As 2604 is currently written, it amends ORIS 731488. This particular statute is part of a model act that is related to the Insurance Division's accreditation with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. The dash one amendment simply removed the amendment to ORS 731488, thus maintaining the intended consistency between Oregon's insurance code and the NAIC Model Act.
Okay. Any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's been a while since we heard this one. The question came up, and I don't recall the answer, maybe somebody else does, about private right of action against chief executives, which I don't know is prohibited or not now, frankly. I just don't know what this changes or doesn't change.
I don't think it changes anything. I think it was there before, but this doesn't. There is no private right of action created here.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
In previous testimony, there was a statement that the goals of 2604 are already met. Does this add new? I mean, I guess I'm missing the point, and I want to understand.
Well, I'll be glad to reiterate the point from my testimony. I don't remember testimony that said the goals have already been met.
So here in the Oregon Association of Hospitals, the last paragraph.
Well, let's ask them.
Mr. Holt was here a moment ago.
I saw Tom back
there. Or their state fiscal. Oh, there.
For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Tom Holt from the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And could you repeat the question?
Yes. Actually, it was on your testimony of, or at least Association of Hospitals and Health Systems testimony on April the 8th, 2009. It says, we believe the goals of House Bill 2604 are already met. And I just wanted to see if that were true and or what this bill adds that I'm missing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenemer, I believe that testimony was from Gwen Dayton, my colleague, so I'm going to be paraphrasing at best here. But
thank you. Sorry, I didn't recall who did.
My understanding is that the association believes that the goals of the bill are being met through hospitals' existing policies that have been ramped up considerably in the wake of events of recent years.
Thank you. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess the sense is that the purpose of the bill is to assure that there are a lot of safeguards in place and to add this one little piece to it to have CEOs attest that they're familiar with it. And I think the sense is that the larger goal that the hospital systems are being safeguarded now is the goal that, and I don't think anybody's impugning that. I think that's. Sean, thank you very much.
Tickle my memory a little bit. One of the questions that came up is the question of when there are potential breaches, where that information is there public access to the specificity of breaches?
No, those breaches. All that's required is they've attested that the breaches have been reported to their board, and I expect that would be in an executive session. So it would. No, it is not intended to make public any information.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenleaf, members of the committee. Gwen Dayton with the Hospital Association. I apologize I stepped out for a moment. If I can be helpful to the committee, I'm glad to.
Did we characterize it correctly?
I apologize. I walked in just as you were
I'm
speaking.
I'm sorry. The memo had the last paragraph that said the overall goals of 2604 have been met, and I characterized that as saying that the goals of the bill is to ensure the security of hospitals, is to help assure the security of hospital data systems, and your point is that you think the hospitals have gone a long way to doing
Chair,
that.
Yes, Chair Greenleaf, members of the committee, I think hospitals have, and we will continue to move on that road.
And I wanted to put on the record that I wasn't. There's nothing in this bill that impugns where the hospitals are going. It's just an added layer to give the CEOs a chance to tell the world that they've personally done that. Okay.
Mr. Chair, my only question is this going to save money?
No, it won't save. Well, it might save money if, as we talked about before, I assume, and now I'm testifying, but I guess in discussion, if a CEO actually decides to look at those safeguards, the systems, and the people who know they're coming to a CEO pays more attention to what they're doing, it might save a lot of trouble for somebody. But it's not intended to save money. It's intended to give us more security that when we give private data to hospitals and to health systems, that they've done everything possible to keep that data secure. And it's just one little more piece to the puzzle. So won't save money. Apparently won't cost money either. It's a report that's already being made, and it just adds an attestation to that.
Mr. Chairman,
this, if I could. I'm sorry, I mistook the information. I thought it was from Tom, and you know, I say it was from you. The last paragraph is what I was referencing. I guess I'm still trying to understand what does this bill do in terms of changing anything in hospital policy or the way this whole issue is dealt with. Because I got the impression from your statement, nothing. And I'm wondering if...
Chair Green, Representative Kennemer, I don't think this bill would change a lot, partly because of what we were asked to do by the legislature last session pursuant to Senate Bill 583, but perhaps more relevantly because of the more recent red flags legislation that passed on the federal level, or rules, actually. They're rules that require anybody who holds a line of credit, which includes hospitals, to develop policies and procedures around identifying red flags for identity theft, and those policies and procedures have to be approved and reviewed at the highest level, including our boards of trustees. So I think that for that reason alone, our hospital boards are much more involved in understanding of security issues than they have been. I also think because of recent legislation and also just the increased need for security of electronic health records, hospital management and our boards are increasingly understanding of security systems and the need to support them.
So this should be really easy to do then, huh?
Chair Greenlech, I think that it is not difficult to sign a form, and we are not asserting that it is. Our only concern about the bill is that we don't think it necessarily advances the cause, and it's one more thing to do that perhaps doesn't support any better security system than we now have.
Yeah, and the intent not only is to do that, but to give people confidence that the system is secure. Having a CEO attest to us that it is, that they've personally reviewed it, seems certainly helped my feeling about security in my data in the hospital. Are we ready for a vote? Would you please call the roll?
There's a dash one amendment.
The amendment first, yes. Somehow the first section got apparently accidentally put in, and we're now taking it out, section one. That's right. That's what the amendment does.
So should I move that
please
we adopt
move the dash ones?
I do. We adopt the dash one amendments dated April 15th to 2604.
We have a motion to adopt the dash one amendments to 2604. Any discussion? Any objection? So moved.
How about a motion to...
Let's do it.
I move House Bill 2604 with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended, thank you.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm kind of curious. I don't think we heard from the carriers about this bill. I could be wrong, but they are also, under my reading of the bill, required to file an annual statement, and I guess I take their lack of testimony on here to signal lack of opposition to the approach, and
or maybe lack of interest,
or lack of interest, and yeah. Certainly feel comfortable moving it along.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I will be a no vote.
Okay.
I won't sleep any sounder tonight, or next year, or the following year, knowing that an attestation has been assigned.
Well, at least if I'm sleeping, woke up for you. I'll say that's Representative Thompson.
Assuming with all the noise coming out of Washington that we're going to be doing a lot of work with electronic health records over the next couple of years.
Possible.
If action follows the money anyway. I'm thinking this might be a better thing to ramp into the security around that larger project. I'm not sure this delivers anything right now without, you know, when we're rapidly moving into a new arena of health electronic health records. Surely security and how we're going to deal with that will be part of that package.
Well, but many of these hospitals have those systems in place right now, and that's what we're talking about. That's exactly right. I mean, the big hospitals have electronic health records, and I frankly do have a worry about data. We're now moving data around in a lot of places, and I think it certainly is no harm to have a hospital CEO explain to the public that he or she has reviewed their data security on these electronic medical records, and
feels it's fine. I mean, it seems so harmless to me, yet it adds a little bit. As we know, when somebody's dealing with their CEO and their board, they pay attention.
Follow up. Will it be that simple, or will this require the establishment of the State Department of Hospital Record Security, you know, with a building in downtown Portland and a fleet of state cars?
Colleagues, it only does one thing.
Okay.
It has the CEOs of these organizations to sign a form that goes with forms they already send to the state, and to say that they have reviewed this, and if there's been any security breaches, they have been... Their board has been notified. That's all it does.
One
it's
form.
It's a Sarbanes-Oxley model for hospital security. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative Dembrough.
Aye.
Representative Garrett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker.
Aye.
Representative Kenemer.
No.
Representative Kotek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer.
No.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Bruin.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 2604 is amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I'll be happy to carry it. We have five bills. We were holding off on these. All right, hold on a minute. We have five bills that we have approval to send to rules, and I would like to move those quickly to get them out of the way. Those are House Bill 2117, 2007, 2019, 3000, and 2824.
Could you say those one more time?
Okay, slowly. 2117.
We have that on Friday.
2007.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
2019.
Yes.
Yes. 3000.
Yes.
And 2824.
Yes. And we also have 2345, which is over on this side.
Excuse me, what was the fifth one?
What was the fifth one?
Yes, please.
2824. The very last one. I'm sorry, give me that number again.
2345.
Okay. Question. We have ability to move it to rules if we want to. Okay. Can I have a motion for those one at a time?
Mr. Chair, I move to send House Bill 2117.
All of these with no recommendation.
To rules with no recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, I've lost track here. We have a specific bill.
2117.
Excuse me.
Yeah, we're going down the...
Yes,
it's the first three.
Can't see the multicast.
The first three on the front page, the very last one on the second page, and the second to the top one on the second page. I think I will safely say if there's no objection, I won't bother with a roll call on all these if there is no objection. So moved. 2117 goes to rules.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2007 to rules without recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? 2007 is on its way to rules.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2019 to rules with no recommendation.
Any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3000 to rules with no recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman,
Yes, sir.
Maybe my records are incorrect. I thought we actually moved this out of committee. Did we not do that?
3,000?
Yes.
No. Okay. 3,002.
And I guess I have my note on the wrong bill. My apologies.
Yes?
We're on 3,000.
Yep.
Correct. We have a motion.
There is a motion. Discussion.
Discussion. What's the intent with this bill? Is it? Can you talk about that? I mean,
my intent is to move it to rules.
I know that.
How much more innocent could it be than that? Moving it to rules means it hasn't died yet.
The rules cemetery or the rules?
Rules.
Well, I don't mean it. I mean, I guess my point is I think there's a lot of merit to this. I don't think it's fleshed out. I think there's a way to amend this to make it do what the proponents want it to do without doing what I heard you publicly say, which is locking in a prescribed treatment course and statute, which I too have reservations about. But I think you could achieve the goal via amendment that it is current best practices. And as current best practices change, as they inevitably will, it accounts for not having a prescribed treatment regimen in statute. But that may be a side note to why it's going to rules. So.
If this makes you more comfortable, the option was to let it die today or to move it to rules.
Okay, I need to ask.
What happens to rules? Who knows? Yeah. Is there any objection to moving it to rules? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move to send House Bill 2824 to rules with no recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? 2824, on to rules, on the long, hard road to the governor's desk. We do need to see if we can track down Representative Witt, and we've got folks waiting. They have a long ride home. And Senator Johnson. Senator Johnson, at last call was in the House Democratic Caucus room. But if you could perhaps check with Representative Witt's office. How many folks have signed up to testify on 2787? Do I have the sheet? Do we have the sheet?
So we
didn't sign up. Okay. Okay, I got it. The representatives and the senators are going to help us on this one. Stand at ease a moment, please. open up the reopen the committee meeting.
And you wonder why this happened.
We heard House Bill 3257 on primary care physicians, on graduate medical education, and we also wanted to talk about nurse practitioners in that bill. It turns out 3257 has a relating clause that would allow us to think about it both in terms of primary care doctors and in terms of nurse practitioners. What I'd like to do, even though I don't have a fiscal because we didn't ask for one, on the advice of the Human Services co-chair of Ways and Means, to move 3257 to Ways and Means. That would require suspension of the rules, which means we need seven votes in order to do that without a fiscal. But that's where I would like to go right now. So, Representative Kotek, if you would guide us through that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And colleagues, yes, the intention is 3257 in and of itself was going to be more complicated to work on, but the relating clause would allow us to do what I think some of us would like to see done, which is for to pursue the loan repayment programs for primary care providers, making sure we can include physicians as well as nurses. And I think this bill would be a vehicle to allow us to do that with the relating clause. So if it comes to our subcommittee, then we can talk about amending 3258 and adding nurses into this particular bill. That would be my intent if we're able to do that in the subcommittee. At this point, 3258 doesn't allow us to add nurses in with the relating clause. So.
Had you seriously considered prorating?
Prorating.
So, because the way the language on 57. Anyway, the prorate so that in you don't have to have the whole program, you can do a part of a program for a payback of a instead of a 4 years.
I'd like to say I don't think we're talking about the substance of the bill at all. It's just
okay.
That we hated not having a way to deal with this bill.
You just like the relating clause.
If Ways and Means wants to, then they can.
You like the relating clause.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're talking loan repayment.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
We're good.
And I really appreciate OHSU testifying to some of the challenges with the 3257 as it sits. And I think that's a revisit it next time type of thing. But in the meantime, take the relating clause and allow us to have it. If we're able to put the loan repayment with the nurses and docs all together, we could do it with this relating clause.
And I still think the odds of getting it in this budget period are really pretty slim.
Oh, absolutely. But you know,
we didn't want to.
We got to keep our
one
options
more. We
want
to keep alive and keep the options open.
Thanks, Paul.
So I need a motion to suspend the rules.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing 3257 to go to Ways and Means.
And is there any discussion about that? Is there any objection? Okay. The rules are suspended, and we can now take a motion to move 3257 to Ways and Means.
I don't have a script, but I'll give it a try. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3257.
Does this go to the floor with a subsequent, or can we move it right to Ways and Means?
Well, there's some fancier language.
It goes to the floor with a subsequent referral
to the Ways and Means Committee.
Right.
With no recommendation.
With no recommendation. Is there any objection? So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
You want that other relating clause, too?
I wouldn't say no, Mr. Chair.
We're trying to keep things up. We know this is such a terrible budget year that we've been really refraining to send things to Ways and Means that we're not highly prioritizing. But we have with us the co-chair of the Human Services Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we're trying to keep as much business open as we can in case the budget doesn't turn out to be as disastrous as we all think it's going to be, although we're pretty sure it is going to be. Do you want to do the same routine? Do we have a fiscal on 2129?
Yes.
No, okay. The same routine on House Bill 2129.
That has a subsequent referral.
It does have a subsequent referral.
So I think we just have, Mr. Chair, I move that we But we still have to suspend the rules?
Because we don't have fiscal.
Because we don't have the fiscal.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we suspend the rules in order that we could send House Bill 2129 to the Ways and Means Committee.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, it's a non-debatable motion, so.
If you'd like to debate it, I'd be happy to. Well, no, we won't debate this one. We'll debate it in a moment. If there's no objection, we will now take a motion on 2129, and we will have discussion.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2129 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with no recommendation.
That also means if you wanted to, you could actually do what it says, huh?
Yeah, actually, Mr. Chair, the point was that the rule suspension is a non-debatable motion.
But this is debatable.
But so if I wanted to kill the bill, I would have done it during that. I would have objected.
We
won't
need seven votes. No.
At this point, it wouldn't have. It's beyond the kill point.
The objection was only to save us taking a roll call. I will go back to that motion again.
I've had the experience today.
I'm not objecting, but just procedurally, it's a non-debatable motion.
Those things are enforced by report, right? We have a motion. Is there any objection to moving 2129 to Ways and Means with the understanding it's not really intended to do what it is now, but to give the Ways and Means Committee maximal flexibility to do things we need to do with all the loose change they find in the sofas? If you see them wandering around your offices, it's that they're looking for the loose change in the sofas. Is there any objection? Hearing none. 2129 goes to Ways and Means.
That was a conspiracy theory, though, right?
Conspiracy theory.
Only that if it's within the health authority, it's okay.
It will be by 2013, but probably not before that. I would like us to consider now House Bill 3175. Open a work session on House Bill 3175. Where are we with this, Madam Administrator?
We have a dash one amendment that has to be adopted. We have received the revenue, and there is no revenue and no fiscal impact from this bill, a minimal fiscal impact from this bill.
And what's the... Who knows about this?
This is the one that requires that investigations be reported to the board within 90 days after receipt. Presently, there's no. If someone makes a complaint to the Oregon Medical Board, there is no time limit on when that complaint has to be resolved or when the investigator has to report back to the board. This would require that the findings of the investigation of complaint be reported to the board within 90 days of receipt. It allows one 30-day extension of time to report to the board. It also requires that certain health professional regulatory boards maintaining negligence claim websites delete the claims if not the claims are filed within 4 years. It's my understanding that the amendment...
Yeah, the amendment only leaves the last part, what you just said, right?
4 years.
The amendment deletes the requirement that things on the board's website be removed after 4 years. This deletes that. It has the Senate sponsors to that approval. It has OMA's agreement with this, and it's a very straightforward thing that allows the board to keep disciplinary proceeding actions on their website after 4 years. It does not require them to remove it. And I think at this point we've checked around and we have no objections to this one. And we have the fiscal, right? We have all the paperwork?
Yes. Fiscal's ready to move. No revenue impact to minimal.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to move that we adopt the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 3175, dated April 22, 2009.
Is there any discussion or any objection? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3175 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Is there any... let's take the roll, please. So somebody outside?
We're missing Representative Kenemer and Representative Kotek.
Hold on a second. Let's see
Tom's
if they're outside. Just to replay the bidding, we've amended House Bill 3, wait a minute, House Bill 3175, I lost it. Okay. House Bill 3175, it was the one that related to disciplinary action. With the Dash 1 amendments that we put in, all that's left in the bill is removing a requirement that the medical board take things off their website for discipline action after 4 years, and this removes that requirement. And that's the only effect of the bill. Senator Bates, who helped move it through before, has agreed to this. The OMA has agreed to it, and we're ready to move it.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
I just want to point out this is one of those rare opportunities we have to vote on a bill that does nothing now except remove language from statute. My guess is we could stand many more bills like this.
We could have an inventory in the interim. That's right. No wonder it doesn't have a fiscal. All right. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Devereaux?
Aye.
Representative
Garrett?
Aye. Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Representative
Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Berwick?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion passes. 3175 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And we will ask Representative Gilliam to carry this, please. This has been one he's been working on for some time. He's going to be very happy about this one. We still don't have our senator and representative. Good. Now she's getting somewhere. All it took was me leaving. I'll tell you what. Well, we'll wait a few more minutes, and if they keep going, we'll bring Representative Whitty in and let he and our guests talk, and then we'll see Representative Johnson if she gets out before we do. Okay. Close the work session on 3175. Open the work session on 3232.
Now we have to have a public hearing on this first.
Ah. I can close the work session and open a public hearing on 3232. Let's see. Is this the governor's bill? Do I remember that correctly? This is the health licensing.
Yes.
Board thing. Okay. Go for it.
Chair Greenlee, members of the committee, I'm Brian DeForest, the acting director for the Oregon Health Licensing Agency. I know you have a very long agenda, so I'm not going to take time to read the prepared testimony. You have copies of that already. Just give you a brief overview of the bill itself. There is a fair amount of housekeeping, which creates the number of pages in the bill. You'll note that we eliminate language in 9 places and insert identical language into a single place. That allows us to streamline the statutes around this agency. This board does a couple of, or excuse me, this bill does a couple of very important things. One, it allows for special certification around certain practices such as estheticians, full-body skin care, allows us to create a certification program that will keep up with technology, emerging technology in the skin care industry. A lot of manufacturers come up with new products, such as laser type of products. We want to ensure that the folks that are using those products are certified, they've been trained properly by the manufacturer or manufacturer certified program, and then are using it safely with the public. Another thing that this bill does is it prohibits the tattooing of minors and certain types of body piercing. Those are the three most important things that are on the list. I believe we've had a chance to speak with each one of you on the other elements of the bill. I understand that there are a couple of amendments to the bill. The Dash 4 amendments relate to hearing aids, specialists, and audiologists and physicians. We've been in discussion with the groups around that. We have no opposition to the Dash 4 amendments at all. There is a revenue impact in that it will reduce our revenues by $37,000, but we're fine because the public continues to be protected when they're out purchasing hearing aids.
All right. Thank you.
I have nothing.
You're just riding shotgun. Okay, here's a chance to have the acting agency director. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I guess my question is, and I know you visited before and we talked about this issue, remind me again how this bill would affect the tattoo and body piercing industry and the availability of those services, which happen to be very popular in my district for young people.
Chair Greenlee, Representative Cannon. The proposal within the bill is to amend statute to match what we're already doing in rule. By rule, we prohibit the act of tattooing a minor except for medical necessity, and we also prohibit the act of piercing nipples and genitals on minors. Even with the parent's permission, we do prohibit that act.
Clarification. Is consent required for the tattoos of minors as well? Is consent available in order for a minor who wants to get a tattoo? Is it permissible with parental consent?
Chair Greenlee, Representative Cannon, no. It specifically prohibits the act of tattooing on minors.
Okay. Can you work us through the amendments? You know which of these are yours?
Neither of the amendments are ours directly. The Dash 4 amendments would allow audiologists and physicians to fit hearing aids. Previously, the requirement for a hearing aid special license falls under ORS 694025.
That's the Dash 4?
Correct. And what that allows us to do is to ensure that there's contractual agreements that are on file between the consumer and the hearing aid specialists themselves. We understand that an identical protection is already in place with the audiologists, and since the consumer is already protected, there's no reason to double license the audiologists.
Can you work this through them?
All right, and we'll hear them. We have a list, but can you work this through the amendments?
Sure. Good. We have some more. This is a hearing, and we have some more folks who want to talk.
Yeah.
But hang in a bit. Tom, will you work us through the sets of amendments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Powers, Legislative Director for Chair Greenlee. There are five sets of amendments to House Bill 3232 relating to the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, some technical cleanup involved in the main bill. There are some not-so-technical changes involved in the amendments, and the notable ones that are probably the most current are the Dash 4 set and the Dash 5 set. The Dash 4 set is an update of the Dash 1 set that removes audiologists from the regulatory purview of the hearing aid program within the Oregon Health Licensing Agency, and would put them solely within the domain of the Oregon Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. The Dash 1 amendments did not totally get them out of the hearing aid program. So the Dash 4s do that in a comprehensive way. And I believe there are representatives from the Oregon Academy of Audiology here who are in support of that, as well as you should have written testimony from the American Academy of Audiology, as well as the board chair for the Board of Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. The Dash 5 amendments were prepared.
What about the 2s and the 3s?
Twos and 3s, Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar with.
All right.
The Dash 3 amendments, actually, I am familiar with. The Dash 3s and the Dash 5s are related.
The Dash 4 and the Dash 5s are the only one we can work on anyway, because they're the only ones we have fiscals for, so let's focus on those.
Okay, so the Dash 4s relate to taking audiology out of the Oregon Hearing or Oregon Health Licensing Agency. And the Dash 5 amendments relate to the composition of the Oregon Board of Licensed Direct Entry Midwives. In the original bill, the board legislation in 3232 takes away a seat designated to a certified nurse midwife and would create a new seat for a public member. And it was the sentiment of our office and some attention that was brought to this that we should not take away a certified nurse midwife seat, but should rather just simply add a public member seat to the board, which would retain the current membership of 4 licensed direct entry midwives, 2 certified nurse midwives, 1 obstetrician, and now 1 public member in the Dash 5s, and that's what those accomplish.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hang around.
I shall.
Okay, panel 1. Genoa Ingram.
Sarah Eckenberg.
Sarah? Ah, okay. And Wendy Chapp. Good. The 3 of you. Let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Genoa Ingram, representing the Oregon Academy of Audiology. I will be very brief in case there are questions from my expert witnesses. The Oregon Academy of Audiology is here to support the Dash 4 amendments. The problem we are trying to address is the double licensure requirements for audiologists. They currently have to be licensed as audiologists under the Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology, where dispensing of hearing aids is under their scope of practice. Additionally, currently they are required to be licensed as hearing aid dispensers under the Health Licensing Agency. The 2 professionals that I have with me today can speak to the education requirements and the consumer protection requirements. I can tell you, though, that there is a national trend to remove the requirement for 2 licenses. There are 35 states right now that only require the single license. The state of California has similar legislation before them and is pending at this time. To our knowledge, there is no opposition to this Dash 4 amendment. We've received support from the Board of Examiners of Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology, the American Academy of Audiology. We've met with representatives of the hearing aid dispensers on Friday. There did not appear to be any opposition at that time. And as you heard from the Health Licensing Agency, there is no opposition there. We are prepared to answer any questions should you have them. I have spoken with, I think, nearly every one of you, all but 2 on the committee, and I believe all of the questions have been answered, but we are here to provide additional assistance.
Let's roll.
Do you want to go first, Sarah?
Sure. Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Sarah Ectern-Camp, Oregon Academy of Audiology, and I have submitted written testimony on the educational background of audiologists. So I'm here to explain that further if anybody else has any questions about the degrees that are required to practice audiology and make dispensing hearing aids within their scope of practice.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee. I'm Wendy Chapman. I'm also here from the Oregon Academy of Audiology. And all I wanted to address was that the Board of Examiners in Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology has a mechanism in place to investigate complaints about practices of its licensees. It's all about consumer protection, and they have indicated that they are willing to take on the additional work of dealing with the hearing aid issues. And there was something else I was going to say, but I've lost it. I guess that's it unless... the other thing was the statistics that we looked at, and that's in my written testimony that you have, that we presented that to the Board of Examiners, that complaints against audiologists in hearing aid dispensing issues have been very minor over the years. And over a period of 5 years, there were 10 complaints, which is not very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Let's continue along this vein and have Evan Evans, John McCulley, and Sandy Label, and then we'll get a couple of midwives to join us and talk about the other section.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. My name is Sandy Liebold, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. Butch Evans is one of the audiologists who is on our board, and I'm here to support this bill as amended in the Dash 4 amendments. The Board of Examiners, it does have the mechanism for going ahead and disciplining and overseeing audiologists. We believe that the hearing aid dispensing is solidly within the scope of practice of audiology, and we're prepared to take this on. I think it will also provide help clarify things for consumers so that there's really only one board, one regulatory body that's dealing with complaints as it relates to audiologists. Did you want to add anything?
Actually, I very much supported this. Felt that this is something that's been a little bit overdue. We've been, as audiologists, dual licensed, and this is a good opportunity to again erase the duplication. So, if there are questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John McCulley representing the Oregon Speech Language Hearing Association. We support the Dash 4 amendments for all of the reasons you've previously heard.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Can I call Holly Scholes and Missy Cheney, please? Go for it.
I'm tall. Chair Greenlick, committee members, this is a very important moment for us and not something that we often do, testify in front of a committee, so it's kind of a big thing for us. My name is Holly Scholes, and I'm the president of the Oregon Midwifery Council. I'm also a home birth mom, and I'm also a practicing midwife. And on top of that, I also am the president of the only direct entry midwifery residential college in the United States, which is located in Portland, Oregon. We're a three-year midwifery program with an additional year for a bachelor's degree. So I have a lot of experience with direct entry midwifery. But even more germane to this, I was one of the architects of the original enabling legislation that put together licensure for midwives in Oregon, which was a pretty historic piece of legislation, carefully crafted. And we spent a lot of time looking at the composition of the board, because direct entry midwives are not the same as physicians and are not the same as certified nurse midwives. And we do deal with very important life and death situations with a lot of different kinds of families and women who choose health care that is a little different than the mainstream. And so we crafted a bill that's a little unusual as a licensing bill. And a big piece of that was the composition of our board. We wanted to make sure that we had input from relevant healthcare providers, and thus we did, unlike other similar boards like the medical board and the nursing board and the naturopathic board, we did include an obstetrician and two CNMs on our board because we felt like it was important to have their feedback and their input. We also made sure, though, that a majority of the board was composed of the practitioners, the midwives, who were being licensed, because what we do is out-of-hospital, field-based, with a very unique set, although overlapping, body of knowledge and skills that are unique to our profession, and considered it to be essential that we have a majority on our board in order to make sure that that point of view and that body of knowledge and skills were adequately represented, so that the consumers, the moms and babies who we work with and who we care deeply about, have that protection. So we're opposed to the Dash 5 amendment because it does not protect the majority that for 16 years, since the enabling legislation was passed in 1993, has worked well for mommies and babies in Oregon. Now, I'm aware that there's been some raw data that's perhaps floated by your desk, or perhaps not. In addition to everything else that I listed earlier, I also served 2.5 terms on the licensing board. So I know its workings extremely well. I know how hard the volunteer boards in Oregon work for the citizens of Oregon. I also know the limitations of those boards. And I can tell you that that is a very hardworking board who keeps completely in the forefront the safety of mothers and babies. I know that as a board member, I was frequently frustrated by the lack of information, accurate statistical information about out-of-hospital birth in Oregon, and that we have worked, the licensing board and HLA has worked with Vital Records to create changes to birth certificates that would allow us to collect accurate information. We've also, and Missy will be talking briefly about other statistic gathering that we're doing, and so we are working to maintain that safety and keep information out there to make good decisions for the licensing board to be able to do its work. So I think that, you know, I can answer questions that you have, but just wanted to be here for you to let you know that it is an amendment that we feel very strongly jeopardizes mothers and babies' health. We're not opposed to adding consumers to the board as long as we protect the majority of direct entry midwives who are the professionals being licensed and feel like that is an essential piece that has to be protected.
As as it stands right now, there are 4 midwives and 3 others on the board.
That's right.
Under the new model, it would change a 7-member board to 8.
Yes.
And it would mean that in order for something to pass, the 4 midwives would need to have at least 1 other vote for it to happen. Now, that, you think, endangers the health of moms?
Well, what we decided years ago was that an even-number board wasn't a great idea because of potential deadlock. And so we wanted an uneven-number board, which by its very nature would create, you know, a majority. So if we had 4 midwives and 3 related but not, you know, not directly trained and directly practicing the kind of midwifery that we practice. So that was our thinking.
Under the existing model, the midwives alone could make any decision on the board, regardless of what anybody else thought.
That's right.
Under the new model, it would require the midwives to have at least 1 other vote to go along with those decisions.
We could end up with a deadlocked board.
That's right, but in order for a decision, it would take 5 members.
Right.
Tell me how having to get 1 other member, again, my question was, endangers the health of mothers.
Okay, let me think for 1 second, answer that really
clearly.
Yeah,
that's what you said. That's what your assertion
yes.
was.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I want to comment on that. And first of all, I'd like to say thank you to Representative Greenlick and
please
the committee.
Please introduce yourself.
Oh, okay. So for the record, my name is Dr. Melissa Cheney. I'm a professor of medical anthropology and reproductive biology at Oregon State University, and I've been studying the American home birth movement for about 10 years. I'm also recently elected to the board. I've been serving for about a year. I am a licensed direct entry midwife practicing for 10 years, and for the last 8¾ months, I've been a consumer of midwifery care as well. So I'm coming at this from all different angles. And so I mainly came here today to talk to you.
You're not planning on doing it yourself, I think.
No, I will have another midwife there. That was the first thing my parents asked
too. Together
so.
Here.
I'm in good hands should something happen right now. So I mainly wanted to talk about the research that we have going on, but the other part that I feel is important to this discussion is that when we look as medical anthropologists cross-culturally at the out-of-hospital birth movement around the world, what we see is that in countries where home birth is very common, so like the Netherlands or New Zealand where the rate is close to 30%, physicians and midwives in those countries are very familiar with the practices of out-of-hospital birth. In the Netherlands, for example, if you want to attend a low-risk mother, you have to go to special midwifery training for a full year where you learn to do low-risk out-of-hospital birth. That system simply doesn't exist in the United States. There's not a good system for communication across different birth settings. And so because there isn't that sharing of information in our country, there is a possibility that you could have different members of the board who see things quite differently and don't always have the best interests of home birth mothers and babies at interest. So I don't know that it could lead to the endangering of the life of a mother, but it is possible that you would have people commenting on Oregon administrative rules, regulations that aren't familiar with what happens in the out-of-hospital birth setting. In fact, that would be commonplace here in the U.S., and I've submitted an article that I recently published with an MD that sort of testifies to the data on how difficult
it
is.
Why have anybody else on the board? Why not just have...
I think it's important to have other people on the board for a main reason, and that midwifery has a foot in both camps, in biomedicine as well as in traditional or complementary and alternative medicine. And so there are many things that midwives do that do cross over into the bounds of the obstetric world. And so it's wonderful to have that feedback. And we actually have a highly functioning board right now where we all seem to get along very well and have a lot of impetus for forward movement. It's been a really positive experience over the last year. So certainly that feedback is important, but there are certain areas where it would be difficult for them to comment because they've actually never been to a home birth. And so that makes it quite difficult to be an expert on what might be the best route during a birth.
I know this should make you feel good because it really brings you right into the heart of the health profession. Every other board also feels that there isn't room for anybody else to be a part of the real decision making. So you're right there with everybody else in this one.
But we do include those other professions on our board, unlike those other boards that you're talking about. So we do have and incorporate their voices and their perspective into our licensure board. And as I said earlier, we were happy to include also consumers. But it makes sense, and there's a tremendous precedent for there being a majority of the profession being overseen so that their expertise is foremost. And there have been decisions made in the past where, you know, the different flowing of how the voting goes, it has definitely not been 4-3 with 4 midwives voting against 3 non-midwife members.
Representative Cannon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment while you both are up here. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone more supportive than I for direct entry midwifery and the home birth movement, as someone who very strongly, my wife and I very strongly considered a home birth ourselves. My wife's sister is in the process of becoming a direct entry midwife. At the same time, I find it very hard to understand why you would oppose a change to add a public member to a board, still putting half of this 8-member board in the hands of the folks who are being licensed. Recognizing, you haven't been a part of the conversations that have gone on among this committee for now going on a couple of years related to these health licensing boards and our interest in protecting public safety. It just seems to me that these non-midwife members who are nevertheless well versed with the profession by virtue of their service on this board, one would expect, who are surrounded by, at least in their roles as board members, surrounded by practicing midwives, are going to have, if not an identical outlook to the direct entry midwives, at least be in sufficiently imbued with the culture and context to be, in my view, to expect them to be reasonable decision makers when it comes to protecting the interests of the profession, but most importantly, public safety. So I will probably be supporting these amendments, and not because of any sort of disregard for the extraordinary work that direct entry midwives do, but because of my sense that, you know, sort of following on the chair, that the balance that this amendment appears
tries to strike is entirely appropriate.
I just want to say that we don't oppose having a public member. We think that would be an excellent idea. And we were very in favor of some of the earlier legislation that dropped a nurse midwife and added a consumer because it allowed us to add some diversity to the board without losing our majority. And that's what we're actually asking for.
Representative Bruin?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Both of you got to this question just a little bit, but just out of curiosity, how often do you have a 4-3 split vote where all four midwives are one way and the three non are a different way? How often does that happen?
I've only been on a year and it hasn't happened yet, so that's okay. A good question for Holly.
It doesn't happen that frequently. Actually, we've had quite a few at the time that I was on the board where it was a 3-4 split with one or more of the midwives going one way, the direct entry midwives, and a CNM maybe going the other way. So there is that back and forth. It hasn't been rigid in that way. But the concern, again, is that the voices, the expertise that's being brought to bear and enforcement issues and rulemaking issues, that the majority of the voices have that experience to draw on and that knowledge to draw on.
Representative Kennemer?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am intrigued by this. A member of the board may be removed by the governor for neglect of duty, incompetence, or unethical conduct. Are those the only standards by which the governor may remove someone?
Well,
in the Dash 5 amendments.
In the other bills we've had, we've made that they all serve at the pleasure of the governor.
Well, that's what I recall, and I guess, I'm having trouble with this language, and it seems to me that, you know, if this board were to become dysfunctional as the midwife's fear, it could be, you know, that's when the governor steps in, and I think we've tied his hands with the nature of this amendment.
This board is somewhat different than the other boards, if I remember correctly, in that it reports to the Health Licensing Agency. So there is, that's why it's in this statute. Am I right?
It is, yes, Chair Greenlick, it is. So,
I mean, there is a different amount of oversight, but, yeah, this is a sort of step away from the from where we've gone with all the other boards. But on the other hand, on all the other boards, we've added public members in the same way.
Well, and this would be the only public member, and I think it's appropriate to have a public member. I also happen to believe it's fair to have a majority of the board being bona fide professionals, but I really am having trouble with this language because I think we need is consistent policy that we've been talking about in this committee is that the governor has the authority to remove people, and we don't spell out the terms of that, and that's the governor's responsibility in the event that the governor determines something is wrong or some change needs to occur.
Well, I saw the governor's representative here. My suggestion on this is, since this is the last day we move these things over and suggest that be straightened out in the Senate, and I certainly agree with you.
Okay.
That would be useful.
Well, both the amendment and the language in the bill as printed say the same thing.
Yeah, it just continued the same one, but we changed it in the other ones. He may actually have changed it in the first bill as well, but the fact that this comes later than the first one, comes out of the Senate later, it's... whichever one comes out of the Senate later would be the one that I would hold. Rest assured, there's nobody here has any issue with the direct entry midwife. In fact, I think in the interim there was a proposal that related to midwives who were not who had been certified and then removing their certification. It stopped them from doing what they could do before. We decided not to deal with that, but we are, in the interim, going to deal with that issue along with the Board of Licensed Clinical Social Workers, and that those will be the only two practice, those are the only two professions left that don't have practice acts, and I think we're going to find some sentiment for moving towards a practice act, and be interesting you for to be thinking about that. So in order to be a direct entry midwife, they would need to be certified by the board. And I think there'll be some sentiment to move in that direction. But that'll be a discussion of an interim of another day, and we'll be glad to hear from you. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Can I have a motion on the... Let's see. We're still a public hearing. Close the public hearing, move into a work session on House Bill 3232,
and ask for an amendment on the dash fours.
And the fives.
Well, one at a time.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the dash four amendments dated April 23rd, 2009 to House Bill 3232.
Is there any discussion on that amendment? Is there any objection? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash fives to House Bill 3232.
Bauer moves the dash fives to House Bill 3232. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to support them, but I appreciated your comment that they need at least the governor's fix, and I hope maybe they'll also look at whether midwives should be a majority on the board, consistent with other boards.
Yep.
And I know that's not your favorite topic, but that's why.
It's my absolute favorite topic. It's not my favorite
answer. Thank you. That's good reframe. Thank you.
I believe lay members should have the majority on all boards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of good that does me. Any discussion on the dash
five? It's not the prevailing view. Thank you for admitting it.
I can be beaten down by numbers. Is there any objection to the dash fives? Let's have a motion on the bill as amended with the dash fours and the dash fives.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3232 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Perhaps someone on the committee can convince me that minors should not be able to get a tattoo even with their parents' permission and even from a licensed and appropriately, you know, practicing tattoo shop. And the future parent of a teenager says yes, 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 yes. But the, you know, former teenager who incidentally didn't get any tattoos says no, no, no.
No genital piercings either, although you don't have to add some
piercing.
I'm sorry I asked that question.
So are we.
I can tell you that as a former...
I'd like to hear the answer.
What up in the interview?
Yeah, we can stand the panties and get the answer. I mean, I can tell you that as a future parent of a teenager, you are going to be very happy to have this law.
There are a lot of laws I'd like to have, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, let's
as a
go.
Future You're parent of a teenager, right. That I'll vote no on, because I think, you know, teenagers ought to have some say in the matter, too.
Do it.
Particularly with parents' consent.
Mr. Chair, this allows the parent of those teenagers to not be the bad guy. He can blame it on the state.
Yeah, we no comment. The one thing I learned about being a parent very early on was don't have any hypothetical arguments with your kids. So you have a few years. Maybe we can change the law back when you want to make sure your child gets to be tattooed.
As a parent of two current teenagers... Thank goodness.
No, Mr. Chair, my question is a serious one, whether there is a greater safety risk associated with tattoos for a, and there may be someone in the audience who can answer this, a greater safety risk associated with tattoos for a minor than for an adult. And if not, I have a hard time finding the basis for this proposed change.
Mr. Chair, just as a related point, it occurred to me during the testimony that I wonder if consideration was given to whether this will encourage teenagers to go underground for their tattooing. If a 16-year-old really wants to get a tattoo, I think they're going to get one. And sometimes regulations like this, though well-intended, just have the effect of driving legal conduct into the underground market. Mm-hmm.
This is where I thought you were going with the safety aspect of it.
Well, I think it's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having said that...
Tattooing
not being as popular in my district, I will support it.
This is a serious question. I think we're laughing because it's a sort of high tension issue, and I think it is a serious concern. You'll have your opportunity to express that in a formal way in a moment,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So. And I apologize because I've been in now. Have we gotten any testimony on why we need this? Was this a recommendation of the tattooing? Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Is that right?
Are
can I? Would you come and talk to us about it?
And
Why don't you get Representative Witt, because we'll move into that next. Good.
Chair Greenleek, Representative Kotek. There has been an administrative rule in place for quite some time that prohibits the act of tattooing on a minor. Credible tattoo artists will not tattoo a minor. They understand that this is a permanent solution to a very short-term urge, if you will. They want to know that the credible tattoo artists take their craft extremely seriously, and they want to know that the person has thought out completely why they want a tattoo. To address the health issues, you're correct in that if a person really wants a tattoo, they will find a scratcher somewhere, and that's where they will contract the very thing that we are trying to prohibit with this board, and that is spread of bloodborne pathogens and other diseases.
Mr. President?
Yes, sir.
Surrounding states, they have the same rule?
Chair Greenleek, Representative Kennever, surrounding states oftentimes do not even regulate the art of tattooing.
Mr. Chair, so how long has this the administrative rule been in effect, and what changes have you seen in practice since it was put into effect?
Chair Greenleek, Representative Dembrough, I'm sorry, I don't have that with me at this time, but I can respond in writing at a later time if that's okay.
Here comes some more testimony.
Here comes the brains of the outfit.
Chair Greenleek, members of the committee, the original bill was put into place in 1995, and Samantha Patton, policy analyst, health licensing, was put into place in 95, and then subsequently administrative rules were written, and at that time in 96, it was written in that prohibited acts would be no tattooing on minors, and it's been that way ever since.
If I could follow up, and so have tattoo artists been reprimanded, or I'm not sure what exactly what kind of recourse you have against them under the rule. Has this happened under the rule? Does having it in statute give you an added ability to stop this practice, and do you feel that it's necessary to have that added authority?
Chair Green, like Representative Dembrough, we have cited people in the past for tattooing minors. I could get you the numbers later. I don't know that it just adds further clarity that we do have the authority to cite those people if they're tattooing minors. So just clearly gives the authority for the agency to do that.
For the record, there's a certain irony that a 16-year-old can provide consent for an appendectomy, but not for a tattoo.
Thank you. My hope is we can pass this bill, move it to the Senate, and perhaps take it back up again there. I think on balance, the bill does two things. It really puts into statute what's already happening, and that gives the governor's staff some security. It deals with the audiology problem and does some other useful thing. So I think it's time. Let's take a vote and let the votes fall where they may.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Representative Kennemer?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Maurer? All these pauses.
That was a yes.
Representative Thompson?
No.
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
No.
Representative Dembrough?
Aye.
Chair Greenleek?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 3232 as amended with the dash fours and dash fives. Moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Let's see. Consent calendar, right? Unless we can find somebody who's willing to carry it.
I care.
Representative Dembro, you did such a nice job this morning. You want to keep trying?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'll carry it.
Who wants
you carry it? Representative Kenemer will carry it.
Could be interesting.
Could be interesting. Close the work session on House Bill 3232. And open up a work session on House Bill 2787. This is a work session in lieu of a hearing. We had a hearing scheduled for last Friday. We did that, and now we're opening up a work session to serve as a hearing. And Representative Witt, will you join us and bring your friends with you? Senator Johnson remains otherwise occupied, which is either good news or bad news for where she is. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, State Representative Brad Witt, House District 31. Thank you for hearing House Bill 2787. This was a bill that Senator Johnson and I prepared in response to a disciplinary proceeding that we had been made aware of with a local nurse. Our investigation showed that there was not necessarily a standardized punishment at the state nursing board, principally because a disciplinary matrix has yet to be developed that would establish uniform sanctions for violations of the nursing code. Today, I and were she here, so were Senator Johnson here, who's out doing the Senate's business, as you indicated, Mr. Chairman. We would be introducing the Dash 1 amendments to 2787, which would essentially gut much of the bill and establish exclusively the matrix, which I have talked about, retaining essentially section sub K on page 4 of the bill. That would be what remains of the bill, Mr. Chairman, and speaks to the development of guidelines, which is in essence the matrix which we're discussing. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, that you would wish the committee to entertain.
Should we hear from your constituents first?
Please do. Mayor, I'd like to introduce first, Mr. Chairman, Mayor Diane Pohl from Klaskenai.
Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mayor Diane Pohl, Mayor of Klaskenai, Oregon, and Chair Greenlick and committee members. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. I'm here in two roles. Primarily, I'm representing constituents in a small town in rural Oregon in the most underserved county in Oregon, Columbia County. We now have no medical care due to unintended consequences of what I consider an erroneous and regrettable decision of the Oregon Nursing Board. I am not here to argue the case before you. Rather, I am here to encourage the passing of House Bill 2787 to improve the process and set standards for decisions made by the state agency. I have attached a copy of an article from our local paper, the Klaskenai Chief, which details the chronological events. I'm not going to go into those, but I did attach it to my testimony for your information. House Bill 2787 establishes a fair system of handling complaints and outlines an understandable and stable process that levels the playing field on each and every case brought before the board. This legislation will outline clearly a course of action for the defendant that minimizes subjective decisions and optimizes the chance of a fair and objective review with clear guidelines. This should not be detrimental to anyone involved. What is detrimental is an unstructured process that leaves a defendant confused, unserved, and vulnerable to subjective and politically motivated decisions that are not across the board. And it also protects the Department of Nursing and the board because of the clarity and purpose and process of any complaint reduces the cost to the board by reducing chances of costly appeals or lawsuits. Oregon is experiencing an alarming shortage of nurses, according to recent reports. And the future looks dismal, particularly for the rural areas that are underserved, such as ours. And this outlook will continue to be dismal if educated and registered nurses and nurse practitioners are subject to a system that will end their careers solely on the basis of a complaint by a disgruntled employee and a flawed course of action to defend themselves. This is what we have now, in my opinion. And my opinion comes from serving 8 years on a health-related board recently. I think I've been off of the board for a year now, the Mortuary Cemetery Board. And I can tell you, without exception, that board would never have taken away anyone's career, living, or reputation on a first complaint, perfect record, no harm, no foul, and no complaint from the public. We would not have done it. In fact, many times we went out of our way to help those particular complaints by helping bring that person in, that licensee, into compliance. And in 95% of the cases, that was all it took. We never heard another thing. Had we arbitrarily taken away the license and career of practitioners on a first complaint, we would have done a great disservice not only to the practitioner and the licensee, but the community they served. And we look very closely at the demographic. Were we going to punish the community in Burns, Oregon, that had one mortuary by taking away the license on a first complaint? Not hardly, and we didn't. And that's as it should be. Mrs. Davis had an impeccable record. Working mothers and their children, elderly and vulnerable citizens and teens were unable to travel distances for routine health care and minor ailments depended on this clinic. One very disturbing unintended consequence is the rise of teen pregnancies in our area among young teens and untreated sexually transmitted diseases, because of the lack of a clinic in our city. The nearest medical help is a 70-mile round trip. Longview, Washington medical community will no longer take our Oregon Health Plan patients due to the problems of low payment threshold and problems receiving payments. It's now nearly impossible to find a doctor to accept new patients, and that's the closest medical facilities that we have. And so we live in a vacuum as far as health care is concerned. Probably the most startling example is the research from our schools that indicates during the times the clinic was in operation, the percentage of 8th grade girls taking oral contraception was 9.3%. Today, it's zero. And we're paying the price in our community because of these unwanted pregnancies in young teens that are escalating and untreated STDs, and we've put together a special task force now to try and address it. We need nurses and nurse practitioners in rural areas. We need these small clinics to serve vulnerable populations. Doctors won't come to small communities. Our only hope is qualified, willing, and capable nurse practitioners. If they're constantly subject to arbitrary and capricious rulings and license revocations on a first complaint basis, there will not be sufficient numbers to serve this state. So I am respectfully asking that House Bill 2787 be passed out of this committee with a due pass. Our rural health care depends on this. Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Absolutely.
You talk about arbitrary and capricious. As I understand the case you're talking about specifically, it was a nurse practitioner who was licensed as a pediatric nurse practitioner.
And she's right here. She can probably
and
maybe
was seeing adults. Is that what the issue is, outside of the scope of license? Yeah, let's hear about it.
Good afternoon. My name is Connie Davis, and I have the dubious distinction of being one of the nurse practitioners adversely affected by the Oregon Nursing Board and their lack of due process. And I wish I could tell you the whole story, but I think Mayor Pohl has provided that for you with Debbie Steele's article on me for the newspaper. So I'd like to focus on some of the irregularities that I experienced with the board during my process with them. Until last October, I was dual licensed in both Oregon and Washington. In Washington, they have a grid. It's posted on the internet, and you receive a copy of it that specifies not only how you are to practice, but if you step outside that practice, what will happen to you. That's not the case in Oregon. In fact, their laws are so vague that it's very difficult to stay within the bounds of what they expect of you. And they have no apparent guidelines for how cases need to be settled when there is discipline. It seems to be at the whims of the investigator and the board. RNs and nurse practitioners called in for investigation are given no information regarding their case or the process. From start to finish, they wait and wait and wait. Even when their attorneys attempt to talk with someone on the board, their attempts are also thwarted. This happens throughout the process, but I'd like to share with you just what happened in my case at the very end. Even though the board's own laws state that a nurse practitioner must give due notice of termination to their patients, this was totally disregarded. In fact, the local editor of the newspaper notified me that my licenses had been revoked. It wasn't until 3 days later that I received notification from the board, and that didn't even come via certified mail. So I was seeing patients for a full day illegally without a license because I was totally unaware that they had made a final decision. The standard of care or standard of practice for terminating patient care in our community in this state is to give 90-day notice. That's what insurances expect. I had to close my practice with 0 days notice to my patients. The patients were angry. The insurances were angry. It even went against other laws that we have in the state that if a patient is abusing drugs, a provider is to give them 30-day notice. So even if my patients had been misbehaving, I was not able to follow the standard of care. And that's just one of the irregularities that was noted throughout my long encounter with the nursing board. It takes 4 pages to list all of the things that were done incorrectly in how they handled my case. House Bill 2787 addresses almost all of these irregularities, and I really would urge you to seriously consider it, not only for the sake of justice, which I did not receive, but also for the sake of rural Oregon. I'm not the only nurse practitioner that this has happened to. In fact, there have been multiple others, and of all the ones I know, they are all practicing in rural Oregon. I don't understand why this is happening to the nurse practitioners in rural Oregon, but they seem to be targeted, and the punishments are not fitting the crimes. Almost all of us, this was our first offense, and corrective measures could have been taken. I would urge you to take a look at the other nurse practitioners' cases. I'm unaware of most of their names, but I'd be happy to give you the ones that I do know. Was this their first offense? Were any patients harmed? I think you'll be shocked at what you find. And this House bill does seek to correct this faulty system. I'm concerned that if something isn't done, rural Oregon is not going to have the medical care that it deserves. And can we survive without that? Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Mercer, will you join us, please?
Excuse me, could I ask you, Representative, would you support the Dash 1 amendments? Are they available?
They have not been, Mr. Chairman, they have not been made available.
I don't know.
I don't have them.
I have some additional copies here.
Representative, do you support the Dash 1 amendments?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kenemer, I am sponsoring the Dash 1 amendments. The original bill, I think, was vastly too broad in its scope.
Yeah.
And this is an attempt, again, to establish uniformity in terms of discipline that may be meted out by the nursing board. And the Dash 1 amendments focus exclusively on that portion of the bill.
One more question. You worked with Senator Johnson in formulating the Dash 1s as well. Does she support them, or do you know?
Yes, she does support them.
Thank you.
Colleague? Just for the record, this bill, along with a few others, we don't have fiscals on, and we're not going to be able to move. But I think this is an important enough issue that we want to take up in the interim very seriously and see what we can do to deal with it across the boards rather than just as the nursing board. I think it's a legitimate. I think Representative Witt and Senator Johnson are bringing us a very legitimate issue that we need to take very seriously.
Chair Green, like members of the committee, I'm Holly Mercer, Executive Director of the Board of Nursing. To my right is Tom Cowan, Senior Assistant Attorney General. Tom tried the Connie Davis case. When we looked at House Bill 2787, we were extremely concerned about the way that it singled out the Board of Nursing in terms of administrative procedures. It's totally changed the administrative procedures just for the Board of Nursing, which seems to fly in the face of what this committee has been trying to do for the last 2 years, which is to standardize procedures. But in meeting with Representative Witt and talking with Senator Johnson, I understand that they are trying to be responsible to their constituents. And we discussed the bill in and of itself. We discussed a way that I completely agree that we need to work on a disciplinary grid. The state of Washington does have a very, I think, a very good model for a grid. But in our view, this is a matter that we should take up in the interim and discuss it in a broader sense and maybe with some of the other healthcare boards. We disagree with the representations that have been made today from Ms. Davis, and we feel that there has been some misrepresentations, even in the newspaper article. We have chosen to not refute those. We have chosen to rely solely on this order. It is a public order. It is 33 pages long. There was only one exception filed on the administrative law judge decision. It was not appealed to the Court of Appeals, and Connie Davis did receive due process. So unless the committee has specific questions about the Connie Davis case, we would like to move forward, work with Representative Witt and Senator Johnson in the interim. We'd like to work with other health care boards, and I do believe that we can get together and put together a disciplinary grid.
Let me suggest this. I'm not sure anybody wants to retry. Perhaps you could make that public order available to the committee.
We absolutely will, sir.
I think, Representative Witt, is this something we can move forward in the interim and get to work on across the boards?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that possibility always exists. But I'm concerned that absent the kind of matrix that we have discussed, that the very likelihood of someone else receiving disparate treatment exists until such time as that matrix becomes a reality. I don't think it's something that is asking too much. I think the majority, frankly, of our other state boards and commissions that mete out discipline have these. And frankly, absent such a matrix, I think the boards and commissions of the state would be open to significant liability, and decisions that they render potentially could be subject to challenge. And Each day that goes by without the benefit of standardized treatment, uniform sets of sanctions, I think opens the nursing board to having some of its cases potentially dismissed.
Yeah, I'm not. Let's hold off a minute. Why don't we get Senator Johnson to join us? Senator Johnson, we moved ahead with the testimony of your constituents.
Thank you. I apologize.
And with your junior colleague. Is that session over?
Pardon me?
Is the session over you just came from?
Successfully.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All it took
sorry,
was me getting out of the
like
room,
I feel like I've just
right?
been dropped in from a parallel universe. And so I listened to, for the record, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Betsy Johnson. I have the privilege of representing Senate District 16 and am a colleague in, on this issue with this Representative Wick. I do feel like I just dropped in from a parallel universe. I don't know what the preceding testimony was. I do know that when we were scheduled here the last time, I thought we were scheduled here the last time, there was an overture on the part of the Board of Nursing to try to see if an accommodation could be reached. While I agree very much with my colleague that predictable sanctions for violations, uniform predictable sanctions, are I think a valuable tool in making sure that the regulatory agencies treat all that come before them equitably and fairly is important. But there was an overture, and I think that that was a positive thing. I think what we're really striving for here is to make sure that agencies that have the ultimate regulatory power, that is to strip someone of a credential, a professional credential, act in a way that is fair and predictable, and that was the genesis of the bill.
And you've heard two things. One is that the board has said they'll begin they are working and will work with both of you to create that matrix. And you heard from me my continuing interest in the boards. I don't believe other boards have that matrix either, and it seems to me that's something that we ought to be examining in the interim and seeing if we can get not only some consistency, but some equity in this.
Mr. Chair, respectfully, I would also add that I like your idea very much of trying to get some degree of equity across all of these boards. Last session and the session before, there was quite a push on behalf of a bipartisan group to make sure that the boards all exercised best boardsmanship practices, that they engaged the boards in the fiduciary responsibility of managing the agency, that the boards were there for advice and consent, not just there to gather the per diem and eat a sandwich and go home. I think that much, I mean, we all have this valued tradition of all of these citizen volunteer boards that come forward. There are 200 boards and commissions where good-thinking Oregonians come forward to serve their state. I want to make sure that their service is valued by having their contributions be meaningful. And so the practice of good boardsmanship at all of at every level, at every one of those boards and commissions, I think is terribly important. And I heard Representative Witt speak about liability in this post-Sarbanes-Oxley environment. I think the failure to exercise the fiduciary responsibility of a board becomes more acute in the failure. So Representative Witt has taken the lead on this bill. I will follow where he wishes to go with it. I just wanted to acknowledge on the record that the Board of Nursing had come forward and I had offered to work with us, and I appreciated that overture very much. And I think with that, I will conclude my remarks.
And you'll see some things out of here, headed over to your side of the building, that moved with some of the issues you were raising. It's very much on our mind. We're going to continue it again in the next interim to try and do the things we can to... I agree precisely with what you just said about how important it is that these boards get some rationality in their process.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and predictability for those folks that find themselves in sanctioned situations who come before the board so that there is a minimum of subjectivity, a maximum of objectivity, clear and swift penalties for failure to follow the rules, and yet not much differential between malfeasors. I think everyone expects there to be equity in the distribution of sanctions, and some of these sanctions that boards are empowered with are major sanctions. And so I think we just have to know that there is equity and fair treatment across the board, and that people that are called before them have an expectation of due process and equity.
Thank you very much. We ended up without having the fiscals and the things we needed to be able to move this, so it's going to go into hibernation for a bit. We'll stay in touch and keep working this one because it's an important issue that you raise. And we have a great
thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you both.
Mr. Chairman, just one more question. The mayor provided a copy of the editorial. Approximately when was that editorial published? Do you know? Must have been in about December, I'm guessing. Yeah, roughly. Do you know the date of the editorial?
Well, I apologize.
Just trying to understand how this
evolved.
I would say it was probably more January. I received it from her on February 19th.
I saw your February 19th on the email, but that
you
doesn't
need to, if yeah. you're going to join us, you need to join us up here, please.
That's
come
okay.
on.
That's not that important, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to understand how recent it was.
Mayor, I hope we did thank you enough for coming all the way to testify. We really very much appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I will close the work session on 2787. We've worked very hard on... where is it, Representative Maurer?
2345. Is that what we're looking for?
2345.
Yes.
We worked very hard on getting 2345 perfected. We have it perfected, we think. We don't have a fiscal.
Oh, no.
I hesitate to send it to the floor without a fiscal because I believe it's going to have a fiscal. So what I would like again is to... Oh, and we don't need a suspension of rules. We have a letter. I'd like to send it to rules to keep it alive. Suggest Representative Maurer and I both let Representative Roblin know that we're sending it to them because we think it's perfected but can't move it now and would like to move it. We'll put that on the record. That it is clear it is going there with the hope that they will work it as quickly as possible and move it to the floor or to Ways and Means if it turns out it needs to go to Ways and Means, which it very well might. So... May I have a motion from you, sir, to move this to the Rules Committee?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2345 as amended. Actually, we need to suspend the rules. I'm sorry.
No, we have a letter, actually.
Yeah, we don't have to suspend the rules. But do we want
to
adopt the amendment here, or do you want to adopt it?
Yeah, that's
so
excellent.
We never did.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we did. We adopted the Dash 5s. I'm sorry. Dash three.
Have we adopted?
Yes. That was the. We've adopted the dash threes because that's what we want the fiscal based on. The dash threes.
Yes, I asked for the fiscal, but we didn't adopt the dash threes.
Well, whether we did or not, let's do it again.
Let's do it again. Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2345, dated April 15th, 2009.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The dash threes are in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill
2345
to the Committee on Rules with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Yes, sir.
There was a question raised.
It has to be without recommendation. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Without.
To rules, it must be without recommendation.
Okay.
We're still on the amendments, right? The amendment, dash three amendments?
No.
I had a question about the amendments.
I rescind my motion.
Excellent.
And I move House Bill 2345 to rules without recommendation. Darn it.
Could we be at ease for a minute?
Let's stand at ease and get our... try one more time to tell us what's on the floor.
There is a motion on the floor to move 2345 as amended to rules without recommendation.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that? Would you please call the it's going to rules. Any objection? So moved. Stand at ease for a second while I see if I can... Claudia, could you join us and tell us what we're doing here? We don't have a fiscal. I have a recommendation that we suspend the rules and send it to the floor without a fiscal. It turns out if we do that, if there turns out to be no fiscal, we can get away with it. If there turns out to be a fiscal, we'll get it back, or it'll die, or whatever. Is that right, Madam Administrator?
Would you say that again?
Okay. If we suspend the rules, and we believe 2118 does not have a fiscal. I mean, does not have any fiscal impact. We'll hear from the governor's staff to say that. Since we don't have a fiscal, we can suspend the rules and send it to the floor. Is that right?
Yes. And in order to drop the bill, I would then have to ask for a fiscal and a revenue.
Okay.
And they would provide that, and it would be available to the carrier on the floor.
And if it doesn't, and if it has a fiscal, then it will we'll refer it back to committee. Or we'll refer it to Ways and Means or something, right?
We wouldn't be able to refer it back to the committee, but there might be something you could do on the floor. That I don't know.
Could I ask you to check in with the clerk's office and make sure we can do this while we hear some testimony and then come back? There is some reason to do this, I think. Is that right? Claudia, will you tell us about this, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Claudia Black. I'm Governor Kulongoski's health policy advisor. I am not sure whether or not there is a fiscal on it. I know that you'd requested one. There are a couple of questions that I have, and, of course, I would like to make sure to request that the committee, whatever they choose to do, make sure that the bill doesn't die as a result of sending it to the floor without a fiscal. I'm a little bit concerned about that. I have, just since it's been quite a while since you heard the bill, I have a little one-page sheet that shows what...
Oh, here comes some help. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Three amendments, too, Mr. Chair.
Yes?
There's three amendments, too.
There are three amendments in here, is that right?
I'm looking at three of them.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are... The dash two amendments are those that reflect the changes that the committee requested the last time the bill was heard, and also some discussion with stakeholders afterwards. And I could either just briefly go through and tell you what the bill does with the dash twos, or just tell you what the difference is between what the dash ones did and the dash twos do. It's your pleasure.
Have we adopted any of them so far?
No, you haven't, Mr. Chair.
I have a dash. It's 2118.
Yeah.
I have a dash 5, a dash 6, a dash 7. Maybe some before that. You know what all that's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to request that Tom Powers come up and join me, because I think the reason 4s may be his, and the 5s were ones that he requested but decided not to go forward with consultation with you.
I always him here telling me what I'm doing.
The dash twos are the ones that the governor's office is proposing. We don't have an objection to what Mr. Powers is
proposing. Tom, help us. What do we got here?
Mr. Chair, members of Greenlake, for the record, Tom Powers, Legislative Director, Office of Representative Mitch Greenlake. The dash three amendments to House Bill 2118, I believe, add a seat for a pharmacy technician to the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. The dash four amendments provide for the addition of a public member consistent with what we just did to the dash three amendments with House Bill 2056 to the Oregon Board of Dentistry. Since we've already made that change, you've already made that change as a committee, and House Bill 2056, that decision would carry that forward and be consistent there. It would also, in that dash four set of amendments, allow for the addition of an extra professional seat should the Oregon Board of Dentistry so choose, because that would bring the number of seats for the Oregon Board of Dentistry to 10, and in the case that they're finding difficulty and they have a 5-5 tie too often, they'd be able to add another seat to fix that. The dash five amendments, were a transcription of the reporting provisions that were first brought to you in House Bill 2059. Those would add the same provisions that were added to other boards' responsibilities to those licensees to two more boards, the Oregon Board of Veterinary Examiners and the Mortuary and Cemetery Board. At this time, it feels we've got a letter back from council saying that it would be pretty sloppy, I guess, legislatively to do that in terms of what the statute would look like. So they've recommended that we try and fix the, it is the recommendation of council to see if we can fix 2059 on the Senate rather than to adopt similar language in this vehicle.
And Mr. Chair, if I might speak to the dash two amendments.
Please do.
In the dash two amendments, we added the Oregon Health Licensing Agency in several places in the bill. And one of those places would allow the Health Licensing Agency the authority to request the fingerprints for anyone applying for or renewing a license, as well as board employees, applicants for employment, and volunteers. And then in the original bill, we had language that would require health professionals to report any licensee that who may be professionally incompetent, guilty of unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, or impaired. That language has been removed. That issue has been addressed in House Bill 2059 in Representative Garrett's work group. The other situation involves those professionals who register for a board voluntarily. The example that we gave were social workers and direct entry midwives. And under the current law, someone in this situation who's had their license revoked by the board could continue practicing. The committee felt that it currently licenses obviously are only revoked for very serious offenses. This provision would not apply to those who are currently licensed. It would apply to new licensees and those who apply for renewal. And at that time, applicants or licensees would be notified of this provision. And finally, the Dash 1 amendments and House Bill 2118 would have required the boards to keep to withhold personal email addresses at the direction of the committee here. We added home addresses and personal phone numbers to the email addresses. And then in working with the Oregon Nurses Association and others who sometimes use those personal emails to do surveys and so forth, we gave discretion to the boards to determine whether or not to release that information, but that they're required to release it if the request is for a public health or state health planning purpose. And that's pretty much the difference between the dash ones and the dash twos.
No.
Pardon me?
We didn't adopt the dash twos yet.
No, you haven't adopted.
Okay. So we would have the dash twos. Can you tell me again what the fives do, Tom?
Mr. Chair, members, the dash five amendments, which seem unnecessary at this point, advice of council.
Good. That's gone.
Okay. Thank you.
Are the six and sevens unnecessary as well?
The dash six amendments, I believe, I don't know who requested those, but if I could speak to their what they do, that would.
It's pharmacy tech.
No, those are the dash threes, Mr. Chair. The dash six amendments to House Bill 2118 would require that the executive director of the Oregon Board of Pharmacy be himself or herself a registered pharmacist. And that is current practice. House Bill 2118 in its original version takes out that requirement. The dash six amendments would put it back in.
Sounds all we need is the twos, it sounds like. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, the dash twos are the comprehensive changes that you had requested earlier. The dash threes would change the membership to allow pharmacy technician. It's your decision whether you want those. And the dash fours carry forward the policy choice made by the committee in the last meeting with House Bill 2056, which adds a public member to the Board of Dentistry.
We don't need that, too, though. We do not need that, is that right?
Mr. Chair, I do not think that's necessary at this point.
And here's what I want to do. We have found out from the clerk that we can suspend the rules and move this to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended by the dash twos. If it turns out that there is a fiscal that ends up, we'll
do something with it, right? What happens then?
She said if there's a significant fiscal, then the leadership will decide whether to send it from the floor to Ways and Means.
Ways and Means. Good. Okay. So I would like a motion to accept the dash two amendments to House Bill 2118.
So moved.
Is there any discussion on the amendments? Yes. Yes,
Chair.
Yes.
Does this modify statutory or the previous language that did not allow regulatory boards to grant any temporary, conditional, limited, or restricted license to a person whose license has been revoked? Because that was in the original language. If you were ever had your license revoked by your board, this made it absolutely permanent with no exceptions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kemmer, the dash twos do change that so that a person may reapply for licensure.
Okay.
That's what I needed to know.
Any objection to the dash twos? Dash twos are in. Can I have a motion on the bill as amended with the dash twos, the recommendation to the floor, the due pass?
You have to suspend the rules.
Aha. We have a motion to suspend the rules.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I have a question. So what happened to the pharmacy tech?
We didn't put that in, at least at the moment.
I'm sorry, I lost track. So for the status of the dash three amendments then, Tom, what was your recommendation again about that? Or your summary of it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembro, I believe I don't have the amendments in front of me, but I do believe that the dash threes would add an additional seat to the Oregon Board of Pharmacy designated for a pharmacy technician, which is a category currently without representation on that board.
Well, I would like to move that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Well, I'd like to see that amendment. Do we have a copy of the dash threes? Let's make sure that's what it does.
I think we got it.
Although, Tom, I trust Tom's memory. Amazing. He's had an amazing memory. Let's see if we can figure it out. Two public members, five pharmacists licensed under this chapter, one pharmacy technician licensed under this chapter. So it creates a 8-member board, just as we've just done, for to have some symmetry to the midwives. Including a pharmacy tech.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out that this committee is a 10-member committee.
10-member?
That your health care committee is 10 members, an even number.
10 members, yeah, it's true. It's true. Works fine. Strong chair, you can get away with anything, right? Is there anybody here from the Board of Pharmacy? Jim, do you know whether there was an objection to this from the Board of Pharmacy?
I think my impression was the Board of Pharmacy would rather hold off to another session. Pharmacy techs have just gone into national licensing and being recognized as professionals, and that they're moving into all of that. You know, what to do between pharmacy techs that are also produce clerks and pharmacy techs that are professionals in the pharmacy. With their licensing, and so they're kind of going through that right now. I don't think there's any intent to keep that from happening, but that provision might be rushing it a little.
I like the idea of the perspective that the pharmacy techs can provide to the board, and since we're dealing with boards here, it would be timely to amend them in.
Why don't we take a motion? Why don't we take a vote on that motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This adds two additional public members. Is there already a public member? Is that the way this reads?
I believe there are two public members.
There's already...
It has two already. If you look up above it...
But this will give four public members?
No. It deletes the two up above.
Okay.
And it simply restates it to add a pharmacy technician to what it says up above in the deleted words.
Well, but I thought Tom said there were 10, it was a 10-member board.
No, he was talking about this committee. He was being a wise guy.
It's this time of night, it's a...
Yes.
Whose copy is this? Are we ready for votes?
At least I confess publicly.
Laura, please.
What's the motion?
The motion is on the dash three. Representative Numbrose, recommendation to add the dash threes to the to this bill. 2118, which would take the board from 7 to 8 and add a pharmacy technician to that board.
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to not support this. I think we ought to think this through a little bit more than on Monday evening about a technician, what it is, and what that definition of a tech is. And I'm just having trouble with that. That's my view.
Okay.
Not that it matters. But
I agree, Mr. Chair. We don't have anyone here from the board if they really, I don't know. Doesn't seem.
Do you want to withdraw it or do you want to count them?
The sense is there is not support.
I think
you
probably don't have support for it.
I move to withdraw this motion, Mr. Chair.
Motion is withdrawn. Now I need a motion to suspend the rules to move 2118 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended with dash two, but we need to suspend the rules first.
Mr. Chair, I move we suspend the rules for the purpose of moving 2118 to the floor without fiscal or revenue. That is, in fact, the case.
That's the motion. That is the motion and the case. Do we have revenue?
Well, when it's moved to the floor, there will be both a fiscal and a revenue. It's without viewing it. You're suspending the rules without viewing the...
Okay, I withdraw the motion, and
we'll take it.
Try again. I move that we suspend the rules in order to deal with 2118
without
viewing a revenue or fiscal statement.
Exactly. Is there any objection? So moved. Can now I have a motion to move 2118 to the floor as amended with the dash two amendments with a due pass recommendation? So moved. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Vice Chair Harper?
Aye.
Representative Kenemer?
Aye.
Representative Protek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative
Bruin? Aye. Representative
Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
Deborah?
Aye.
Representative
Garrett? Aye. Representative
Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative
Harford,
would you carry this one?
Sure. Thanks.
2118. I close the work session on 2118. Let me just, if I may, stand at ease. I think Order?
We can try.
First of all, we'll take an easy one. We'll take 3228. Do we need a suspension of rules, huh?
Yes, because you're doing it without viewing the fiscal.
We're going to send it as it is to Ways and Means, but we need to suspend the rules to do that and then send it to the floor with the subsequent to Ways and Means because it's already assigned to Ways and Means. The next one we want to do the thing, we'll just send to the floor. We think it will have a fiscal, and if so, then it will get sent to Ways and Means, but we can't send it to Ways and Means because it doesn't currently have a subsequent to Ways and Means. So if I'm going to open a work session on 3228, and I'm going to ask for a motion, Representative Kotek, a motion to suspend the rules.
Actually, Mr. Chair, could we do a motion to adopt the dash ones?
Oh, okay. We can do any motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash ones, the 3228. These were presented previously at the last public hearing, and substantially it replaces the bill, so that's the version that should go forward.
And it should take away a fiscal because it allows them to do it with money.
Yes, Mr. Right? Chair, it's essentially permissive language setting up within the Department of Human Services a place to set up an Oregon Oral Health Care Fund. It says if money became available, it could be used for these things. It's completely permissive of the dash ones.
Okay. Any discussion of the dash ones?
Mr. Chair, I volunteer the first dollar for this fund.
We can all chip in a dollar.
Did you hear that?
That'd be good. We'd have $10. That'd be good. Well, that's not a taxation if it's voluntary.
Pass the hat.
No, that's called philanthropy.
There you go. You can take it off your income tax.
That's right.
Hearing no objection, the dash ones are adopted into 3228. Now a motion to suspend the rules.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules. Help me out here.
In order to
move.
Send it to Ways and Means without viewing the fiscal.
For the purpose of sending House Bill 3228 as amended to Ways and Means.
Sends fiscal.
Without reviewing the fiscal.
Is there any objection? So moves. Now a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3228 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation.
Do pass, yes.
Yes.
Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dembrough?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Representative Kennemer?
He had to go to the...
Excused.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session on 3228. Open a work session on 3259. Incidentally, we have... 3262 that we're going to let die. There is a bill coming over from the Senate that allow us to reconsider that, and we will do that when we get it. I'm going to work session on 3259. I need, in this case, a motion to suspend the rules to allow us to move this to the floor without having viewed a fiscal or a revenue.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
Do we have a public hearing on this bill?
No. Excuse me. Close the work session on 3259. Open a work session on 3259.
Public hearing.
Public hearing. Jonathan, you don't want to testify. Right? You want to testify?
Not really.
Okay. Close the public hearing on 3259. Thank you very much, Representative Cannon. It's getting late. Open a work session on 3259, and I'll take a motion to suspend the rules.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules to allow us to send House Bill 3259 to the floor without having seen the fiscals.
Is there any discussion of that motion? Is there any objection to that motion? So moved. Does this have an amendment?
I don't have one.
No. This isn't amended, is it?
No.
Okay. A motion to send this to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
A Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3259 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Please call the roll.
Vice Chair Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Bruin?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dembrough?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Harker?
Aye.
Representative Kenimer?
Excused.
Representative Kotek?
Aye.
Chair Greenlee?
Aye. Motion passes. I'll carry it if it actually gets to the floor. Be sort of being short-circuited to Ways and Means. Folks, you have done a tremendous job. This is step one. We finished all our work. We had about 80 bills when we started this a week or so ago. And Roxy, you've done an incredible job. Laura, you guys have yes, sir.
Are you about to close the room?
I am about to.
I was going to ask the fate of 2850 because I don't recall you mentioning 2850.
If I haven't mentioned it and it's on the agenda, it is now dead. Oh, that's the one that we thought we really have in another place, and I couldn't get permission to send it anywhere. So
we don't have the date anywhere.
Yeah, we don't. But maybe we can add it to another bill that comes over from the Senate.
All right.
We are adjourned.